Prepare yourself for invasion. This is Indie Invasion.
Hey guys, what's happening? Welcome to another Indie Invasion podcast interview. I'm Mac, and we are excited to have with us today Eric Louchard. Did I say that right?
That is correct.
Yes. All right. I'm doing pretty good with this pronunciation thing here lately.
Better than me.
But he is the creator and owner of Antimatter Games that runs Deep Wars and Shadow Scene. We got a lot of cool questions for him. And as always, I am accompanied by the dulcet tones of Eric Huffman. Say hello, Eric.
Hello out there.
That sounded like it needed to be followed up with a don't forget to tip your waitresses and welcome to the Kit Kat Club. So anyway,
hi guys.
Welcome, Eric. We are glad to have you here with us tonight.
Well, William, thanks for having me on, and hopefully I can answer some good questions and help people know what our game is about.
Well, I don't know if you can answer any good questions, but we do have questions.
Okay, well, I can answer questions well, I guess.
There you go. All right, Eric, why don't you, why don't you take us away?
Okay, something we like to always start off with our interviews, Eric, is to actually kind of get to know the developer, the creator, and kind of ask you, how did you get started in the gaming hobby? What was your, like, your gateway into it?
Initially, probably like a lot of kids from the early 80s, I got a D&D Red Box set when I was 10, and that was the first introduction to any type of gaming. So it was just me and a friend, and we just started figuring out how to play role-playing games in general and just something different than your typical board games. And it was such a new experience. It really captured my imagination and what you can do with gaming. And so that was really fun. That was like the first introduction of that. And then I went on and started doing a lot more miniatures painting and kept playing role-playing games, but got more into the miniature side. And then after a few years taking a break from college and up until maybe 10, 15 years ago, then I started really getting back into miniatures painting and doing more competitions and started to, think, well, it'd be fun to make my own game and my own miniatures. And that's where the original Shadow Sea came from and Deep Wars after that.
Well, for those who haven't seen them, I've seen them because I frequent the Antimatter Games website, but Eric is a phenomenal painter and he has a great book out there. It's not a whole bunch of pages and it's really easy to get through and read about painting. And I think I had told my Eric, the one on the top there before, that a lot of all of the glazing and washing and inking techniques I got from that book. And I think, I don't even remember when I got that book. It was a while ago.
It was like 5 years ago when it came out, when I put it out. I'm glad you got some good use out of it. It's a lot of what I did in there. Those are newer techniques I discovered after spending time away from painting miniatures. And so I was doing a lot of watercolor painting and painting, not really landscapes, more like animal pictures. So, high detail, sort of designs of crabs and jaguars and things like that. So I have some of those pictures on my art station website. And but I took a long break and then I got back into miniatures painting and I just thought, well, I got to take advantage of some of these things I've been practicing for a few years. And some of these new materials and new paints. Because when I started, when I was 10, I had testers, like everybody, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everybody's got their paint thinner. Everybody's got their little tester's brush that they try to work with, and maybe they get something from the art store. But otherwise, it's like you get your Grenadier figure from a little box set, and you do your best to get the enamels on it and don't breathe too many fumes. And, from there, I spent a long time working with that. before, you know, I took a break, and I thought, okay, there's got to be an easier way to get a lot of paint and shading and stuff done on these models. And because watercolor is a very fast technique. I mean, it's one of these things where you try to abstract a lot of things instead of building up like oil painting. And so that was where I came from. And that's when I discovered the Liquitex acrylic inks.
Right.
They're like really thin paint, essentially. And that's, once I discovered that and found the things you could do with that, that's when I really branched out in my techniques. And so, yeah, that's what I use all the time now.
Well, I feel like the third wheel here now because I have two Erics and both of them do watercolor painting. Maybe yeah. I better go down and pick myself up a palette or a paint thing and try.
We'll school you.
I'm gonna need some education because I don't know how. I can watercolor with my kids with the best of them, but it's not gonna look good. Yeah, a little bit of finger painting goes in there too. So you said you got started on Redbox D&D. So did I. That was my go-to as well when I got started. What was your favorite game in that earlier period? Was there anything that was the favorite, or were you a Redbox D&D guy to the core?
I stayed Redbox D&D, got the expert set also, but I always liked Keep on the Borderlands. I mean, it was just one of those things where you could play that solo if you wanted to. And so I played that solo a lot, cause you could randomize your party, randomize where you go. It's like all the caverns had specific letters and everything. So you knew exactly where you were going to go. So if you didn't have somebody to play with, you could actually do that. And I didn't have a lot of, you know, people around to play with after I moved to a different state. And so, yeah, I used to Keep on the Borderlands. And then I played a little bit of Rollmaster and MERP. So that was after Redbox. I switched to, you know, I got the second edition D&D, played that a little bit, but mainly switched over to MERP when that was coming out. And that was fun because you had, you know, it's a tough play experience with all the criticals and everything.
Oh yeah. The criticals were a blast.
Yes. So Rollmaster was the other one. My friend had Rollmaster, and yeah, that was a little too in depth, but I liked MERP that, you know, it streamlined it a bit. And
yeah.
You didn't have too many tables, but both of those were fun though. You can still use Keep on the Borderlands and just modify the creatures in there and use the MERP and Rollmaster if you wanted to. We did that a lot.
I did the same thing. I used to take the crit charts, and I would use the crit charts in my other fantasy RPG games because some of them were just hilarious to read.
Right.
What would happen. Whether it was a good crit or a fumble, they were a blast to read. I still have a bunch of the Rollmaster books in PDF form, and sometimes I just go back and read the crit charts. I don't read the rules. I just go back and read over the crit charts because they're hilarious.
It's got a lot of it's well thought out, the way the tables are in the combat system and the way the armor works. It's just it's exceedingly complex. I tried to actually program it into BASIC when I was in junior high because I thought, all right, I got to get this into some simpler way than having all the tables. But that turned out to be even harder just to
do. Right.
All right, Eric. Let's go ahead and get into your games. And what kind of inspired you to kind of place Deep Wars and Shadow Sea in the ocean, the water type setting for you? What was your kind of inspiration to do that? Because I don't think I've ever seen a skirmish miniature game of any kind that's in a setting like yours. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything like Deep Wars that's specifically underwater. I think there may be miniatures games where you can take your models underwater, maybe if they swim or something, but it's nothing that's specifically designed like that. And I think what it really started with Shadow Sea was the first game, and my idea was like a Jules Verne type world, an underground lost world, underneath the South Pole, and that always has to have an underground ocean. That's part of the whole,
right.
Deal. And the original idea for Shadow Sea was it was a land-based adventure game. There was water, and you had rules for boats and for swimming and things. But then after a while, I thought, okay, what would be a good expansion for this? And you've got to be able to explore underwater. And
right.
But for me, it was logical to make an entire game underwater. I don't know if anybody else would have thought that would be logical. that was the most interesting thing to me, because once you have the underwater world itself is really, you know, unexplored normally. But having an underwater world that's in a lost world with Atlanteans and ancient cities and all kinds of things that you could discover, I thought that would be even more interesting. And have submarines that you could explore areas and have different battles underwater on the surface, breaching ancient wrecks, that sort of thing. That seemed to be interesting. And my background was also in marine sciences, so I could take some of what I know and apply it to how to describe the environments and mm-hmm. what is necessary to do you got to be able to play the game, and it should be simple, but you want to have some sort of crunchy rules to understand, yes, if you rise too quickly in the water column or right. dive too quickly, you can get barotrauma, you can get the bends, things like that. People like that. Hydrothermal vents, if you get too close to them, you can get killed, but you can mine crystals, things like that. And that's actually, an actual thing.
Right.
there are companies looking to mine next to hydrothermal vents to get minerals. So I just took things that I had known and had researched and tried to incorporate them in the game to make it a little more interesting.
And okay. Incidentally, making hydrothermal vents out of hot glue for your table for Deep Wars is pretty doggone easy. And if you go in the Facebook group, you might have to scroll back a little ways, because I made them a long time ago, but I did just a little picture tutorial on it. I made it with hot glue, bases, and straws. And they look, I love them. I think they look great. I don't care what anybody else thinks. I like them, doggone it.
I mean, they can grow in any direction you want. So that's the thing about them.
There you go. So having kind of set the tone for where you got the inspiration to put it where it is, tell us a little bit about the actual game. What's going on in the world? We like to preface this question with, feel free to ramble about your game as much as you want to, because the more you ramble, the more we enjoy it and the more we learn. So just introduce us to Shadow Sea and Deep Wars.
All right. So the game world is set in the late 1600s. So the original Shadow Sea was 1670. Then I the newer versions, I progressively moved up the time period and tried to predict what would happen when people are exploring from Europe, discovering ancient artifacts, bringing them back, and then what is the next step? And so for Shadow Sea, it was early, like 1670s, then it went to 1680, and around that. So there was a lot of pirates, explorers, adventurers, and the idea is that they had discovered the entrance to the underground world in Antarctica. And the first explorers went down, and that was the discovery of the Shadow Sea world. So those were called the Fortune Hunters. In the game itself, they are an entire faction that is made up of adventurers and pirates, mercenaries, Templars, just people that are trying to explore this new world, and a lot of it just to get treasure.
They are also known as the best faction. No bias there. No bias there from my part, but
they've got a lot of variety to them, and they got gunpowder. So that is like the initial intro to the game. Is a lot of the stories that are in the game are following the Fortune Hunters and their exploration into the Shadow Sea, and so they explore fungal forests, lost cities, and they encounter different tribes of natives that live in the underground. And so some of those include the Axabalan Empire, which is an empire of Aztecs that had actually migrated very deep underground. They were looking for Mictlan, and so they were going in their underground caverns, and they kept following them farther and farther, and they discovered the underground world of the Shadow Sea. So the Underlands, that's what this area is called. So that was the original reason that they actually got there. But that group of Aztecs, when they formed a civilization in this new world, they encountered the elder inhabitants that were there for thousands and thousands of years. And so these inhabitants had a lot of ancient technology. They're kind of like Atlanteans. You could think of them in that way, but a lot of magical power. And so they taught this Aztec group and taught the magical powers. And that's how the Axodon Empire got sorceresses to help build their kingdoms. And so the kingdom, that whole empire now stretches across the underlands, and it's ruled by immortal sorceresses, essentially. And they have tried to keep their power going, but they are a declining empire. They have been building their armies through creation of beast men and creation of dragon men. And that was their latest poor creation, because the dragon men went rogue. And those ones have created their own army called the Draconid Legion. So the Draconid Legion is another faction. So you have your Fortune Hunters, Axobalan Empire, Draconid Legion, and then another empire, another group is the Sunless Kingdom, which is within the fungal forests. And that one a lot of people like. It's sort of a mercenary force. You can hire different species that live in there to fight for your warband. And so there's troglodytes and giant birds and cave trolls and forest giants and things like that, and some insect type creatures called the Clawchuck. And so those are a separate force, but you can hire them for gold, basically, to work for the team. So that's one of the other ones. There's another couple that they're still growing right now. They haven't been expanded as much upon, but the Order of Yosoth is popular. Yes. People know that one a lot. And those are they're an order that they come from the old world of Europe also, but they are more sorcerers, summoners of demons. Dr. Drakenstein, that's one of their main characters. He's a necromancer type reanimator, so they create a lot of reanimated constructs.
You like that, didn't you?
Yeah, here we go.
These are some of the main forces there. And so Shadow Sea, in order to translate into Deep Wars, I took a lot of these forces and said, okay, well, how can you get these guys underwater? And a lot of them, they had come in the newest edition of Deep Wars through submarines, through underground channels into the underground ocean. So the Fortune Hunters of Deep Wars are basically the same as the Fortune Hunters in Shadow Sea, but they're wearing dive suits. And there's a lot more scientists involved and a lot more specialized guys. So while Shadow Sea may have a lot of more pirates and sort of adventurers and conquistadors, Deep Wars has more soldiers and scientists. But dive suits and mechanical constructs with torpedoes and things like that.
Yes, torpedoes are awesome.
The biggest force that people like the most out of all of them is the Dark Mariners. So the Dark Mariners were originally one of the Elder Race that was in Shadow Sea, but that entire Elder Race went underwater thousands of years after they taught the Axodon Empire about the magic. So they went underwater and they split into different factions by using too much biotechnology to mutate themselves, and another one using a lot more ethereal magic and technology and sort of splintering off and not really trying to collaborate with the other groups. So the Dark Mariners are the ones that used way too much biotechnology, mutating themselves into tentacled monstrosities, summoners of demons, and mixing the blood with them, ethereal creatures. And so people really like the look of them. They're very Cthulhu-esque in their design. Yeah. And a lot of their weapons and vehicles are biotech weapons, like a biosubmarine that's a coelomech, a gigantic coelocanth submarine. So that one is a popular force, and it does work. Since they're amphibious, they can work both on land, in Shadow Sea, and underwater in Deep Wars. And they're pretty much the main enemy of the Fortune Hunters, and that's what we have in a lot of battles and a lot of description of the battles. I mean, that's pretty much an overview of what is going on there. And then these different forces, it's a skirmish game. So you have war bands that are a small number of characters, maybe 4 to 6 models, and you do a battle with them. It's a competitive game. You can have multiple players, one with a, you know, one player with each force, but you can have like 4 players if you want.
That's nice.
Yeah, since it's so few models, you can keep it going pretty quickly.
Yeah. It is a quick playing game. It really is. And I remember when I first got into the game, a typical game being 10 turns. When you look at the majority of other skirmish games out there, you know, they're 4 turns, 5 turns. So your initial perception is, whoa, 10 turns. This game's going to take 6 hours to play. Yeah. And it really doesn't. It plays very quickly. And as someone who plays pretty regularly, there's a few things that I'd like to touch on just so people can hear about certain aspects of the game. And that's, I think one of the things that you struck on that was just gold in the game is the ability for the models to cross over. And not just cross over, but you can essentially, I mean, if you mentally separate the two games from each other, you can essentially set up a board that's kind of half Shadow Sea, half Deep Wars, and you can have a battle with everything that you want. There's some limitations. I mean, you can't take your angler fish on land. But don't get too close to the edge of the water if I bring my angler fish, because he can still get you a little bit if you get too close. But the other thing about the game is I am a model junkie. So when I look at games, what are you trying to say, Eric? I'm not a model. I am. So when I look at games, I look at two things first for me. One is, what kind of story can I tell? How can I slice out a piece of this game to make it my own little piece of it and do my own little world on my table? So the narrative part of it, and then the models. And we actually just discussed this the other day, Eric and I did, that there's 3 companies' models that I try and buy absolutely everything. And one's Twisted, Demented Games, the other's Drowned Earth, and the other one is Everything You Make. Because the sculpts, I cannot emphasize enough, they're absolutely gorgeous, and they just ooze character. And the Dark Mariners literally ooze stuff and character. But there's a lot of oozing going on with the Dark Mariners, but they're absolutely stunning models. And if I'm not mistaken, you sculpt some of them, don't you?
Yeah, I did when there was more hand sculpting involved. So I have sculpted a lot of the Draconid Legion and some of the Fortune Hunters, like just a couple, but mostly Draconid Legion and some of the big creatures, like the giant anglerfish I sculpted, the dire fish lizards, the ones for the scaly horde, which I didn't mention also. Like I said, going over all the different forces, I gotta forget. But the scaly horde is giant creatures, underwater monsters, and they're mercenaries as well. But a few of the and for Shadow Sea also, I like to sculpt bigger, you know, big creatures. Right. So Kalath the Reaver was a giant, like a armored triceratops with a dragon man riding it. So I did that, and the Skullcracker bird, that was one of my first ones actually.
I love the Skullcracker.
Yeah, that one was fun. So I tried to really capture the art there because I liked the sort of the look on his face, yeah. the expression of the bird.
Well, I'm not terribly happy about Kalath the Reaver just because my regular opponent almost has his painted, and I'm not really looking forward to him being on the table on the opposite side from me. So, because I already have one nemesis, and it's when my son brings Alahal to the table, the leader of the ancient. Yes. And I have spent the past 3 years trying to kill Alahal in any single game that we've played, and I have yet to succeed. Although I did get him down to 1 wound in 1 game, but I didn't win.
Yeah, each of the forces has a really powerful leader on its side. And yeah, Alahal is really tough because of his higher armor and he can shoot from such a long range.
Yeah.
But Kalath can soak up a lot of damage and he can move quickly. So he just can't shoot anything, but once he gets to you, he's going to cause a lot of damage.
I am certain I shall be doing a lot of running.
Yeah.
Or spell casting that involves flying to not be on the ground with him. What you got, Eric?
Okay, so to pick your brain a little bit, what kind of stuff do you guys have in store for the game? What do you got in development? Any kind of breaking news you want to unveil to everybody?
Okay, well, what I've been working on recently is a side project called the Uncharted Realms, and that's actually starting to grow a little bit more.
Okay.
A lot of that was designed, it's the same game world. And what it is it's going to be the Shadow Sea and Deep Wars game world about 5 or 10 years in the future from where 2.5 is. So extrapolating from where we are right now in the game, where these different forces are battling all under the underground right now, so underground ocean, you know, the underlands. But what happens in 5 or 10 years after that? So what is going to happen is the battle will take place over the entire planet now. So underground forces, some of the main underground forces, are going to be invading the surface world and invading the old world of Europe. So that is going to be the main thrust of what happens in Uncharted Realms. Now, it has a different name than Shadow Sea and Deep Wars because it is sort of a different game. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it's all the characters are going to be the same. The rules, I think, are going to be slightly different. Okay. We're looking at a D20 type base, and a little more RPG-esque in some of the way it is. It's going to be presented. What I'd like to do is have more of a capability for solo gaming.
Oh, that's exciting.
Narrative adventure. So in the two-player starter sets for Shadow Sea and Deep Wars right now, those boxes come with a rule book that has a narrative adventure with multiple scenarios. It tells you exactly what to do for the scenarios and how to run them. And you could, in theory, play those solo. And the Grace Flynn game also, that is a solo type adventure. And those are fun to write. I mean, I have a good time writing that, and it helps to keep the fluff moving, the entire storyline. Yeah. That's part of a big thing of what I like in these games, is to try to have an ongoing storyline so all these characters and all the scenarios can make sense and have a, you know, play sort of a grand part in everything.
Yeah, and, have a purpose for you wanting purpose, right, to take exactly. them.
It's not just you meet, you know, side A and side B meet in the field. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you can do that if you want, and I give everybody the option for that, but I want the game to be, at least Uncharted Realms, I like all of them to be a little more than that. And so that's the direction I've been moving towards over the last few years with the two-player starter sets and the Grace Flynn game, and then Uncharted Realms as we're going forward, to really have more narrative feel to it. And, the campaign aspect was already in Deep Wars, but this is going to make the campaign make a little more sense and have more to it. And so that's what I'm looking at. And cool. So it gives an option for a lot of new units, a lot of new characters, a lot of new ways to play. So if you want, I mean, just how I'm imagining things, the Draconid Legion are invading, let's say they're invading you know, the coast of Spain, and they've sacked a city. And so your fortune hunters can be trying to reclaim a specific artifact from the city and avoid the Draconid warriors that are crawling around there holding their cannons and fire crystals and everything. So there's that aspect. And then the Dark Mariners rising from the depths, you know, taking a city and then a submarine battle off the shore, or trying to, you know, fight off the Dark Mariners from a large galleon, you know, things like that.
I've played that exact scenario before. I've done it myself. It was only, it wasn't the Dark Mariners, it was the Ancients. And as I'd expect, things did not go my way. The Ancients came up and took exactly what they wanted from my ship.
Well, Eric said the magic word right there, Mac. Narrative.
We are suckers for it. And that's probably what originally attracted me to the game. I'm a sucker for unique and narrative. And then, of course, when I saw Deep Wars, and I was like, what in the world? That's got underwater stuff on the cover. And then I started looking into it and realizing the game was actually played underwater. I'm like, oh, okay, how much doesn't get any more unique than that. I've never seen a game like that. And then start going into the reading into the book. And it's like, okay, starting out with a story, that's good. First page, starting out with a story. And then all of a sudden, the explosive opportunities of narrative. And what I really like that you did with that is that you set the tone, you set the story up. And then it's kind of like you just release all the players to go and begin making these stories out of it. And to me, I'm not a competitive player at all. So what I want to do when I play is exactly what you were saying. I want to start my war band and I want to tell a story with them. And that's how I want to play the game. And if anybody out there in listening land is looking for that in a game, this is one of those games that most definitely does that, without a doubt.
Yeah. The current version of Deep Wars and Shadowsea both have a big narrative feel to them. They have the campaign improvement over time for war bands and for individual characters, sort of a Mordheim type thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of different environments. That's what the book. Yeah. The books have a lot of description of how to set up your maps with the different environments with deadly scenery and wild creatures that have their own type of AI routines. And that's definitely something that Uncharted Realms and sort of the next levels for Deep Wars are going to really build upon. That's got to have more wild creatures, new AI types, boss creatures, things like that, that you can have your war bands. They'll be battling each other. They turn their back. All of a sudden, one gets eaten by a gigantic, Tyrannosaurus or something like that. Stomped by a forest giant.
Or you stumble into the wrong fungal patch.
That's right. Yeah,
that's never happened to me. Never.
One wrong move, and you're dead meat. So it's a that's one definite aspect that people like about the games is the environment itself is something you have to worry about. Yeah. A lot more sometimes than your enemies if you're not careful.
Yeah, and I love that. I love modeling that, being able to build those little patches to put on the board. I have boxes of stuff that I have built that is nothing but dangerous terrain for Deep Wars and Shadowsea. They're just boxes of different kinds of dangerous terrain that I can throw on the table because it's such a great idea. It speaks to me because for me, when I set up a table, it's like the third player in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when you have dangerous terrain, well, then it really is the third player. It's not just a building. It's interacting with what's going on, and it becomes something you have to consider. So it's not like you had to convince me to play anyway. I mean, I'm sitting here with my Deep Wars shirt on.
Sure. But for those who are watching this, a lot of people have said they love Mordheim. They love that type of adventure where you're building your war bands, you're improving them over time, you're having sort of a narrative battle, and they like more of that, and that's what this is. It's just it's got a different type of feel, of course, because you have underwater and you have land and sort of the Jules Verne aspect and steampunk and crystal tech and Cthulhu, a lot of that mixed together. So, people seem to like that aspect of it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful environment. So now this one, nobody so far has liked this question as a developer because it's hard for you. What's your favorite faction or your favorite character in the game?
My favorite faction was always the Draconid Legion. I'm just always partial to lizard men and dragon men and dragons.
Okay.
And so, plus I sculpted a lot of them because I just like sculpting them. And
right.
I like the Scaly Horde also. The Scaly Horde is technically the Draconid Legion underwater.
Right.
Plus a lot of giant fish and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I'd say if it was, Shadowsea's Draconid Legion underwater, probably Scaly Horde because I just liked sculpting those guys. And those are the last ones that I did by hand sculpting. And it's just right up my alley because it's biological creatures.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Direfish Lizard's my favorite model. That's my favorite one. I've got three.
Yeah, that was fun to sculpt. I got to say that.
They're fun to watch eat people too. That's a big favorite of mine.
All right, Eric, what games do you currently play right now? What is on your table that you're playing?
That's a good question. I don't have time to play a lot of games. the thing is, conventions were going on, then I was prepping and running demos and mm-hmm. getting stuff ready. And so just running Deep Wars and Shadowsea. Right now, I'm not actually doing any tabletop games other, I may be looking at some, but I'm not, I don't have an RPG game going. I don't have mm-hmm. any other stuff going on. I'm sort of in the middle of designing right now, so.
You're a busy man, basically.
Yeah, unfortunate, but that's, yeah. If I was, I would probably play 5th edition D&D because I got the rules. I got one of the basic starter sets. It still looks, a lot like, I guess, 4th and not as much like 3rd, but I played a lot of 3rd edition D&D, when that came out for a few years, and that was really fun. But I guess I like the concept that 5th edition would be sort of like 1st edition in the way that they abstracted some things. And mm-hmm. so I thought that would be fun. But yeah,
that would be time. Would play.
All right. So as we're getting to the last few questions, for the people listening, what's your elevator pitch for why people should play your game?
All right. So if you like tabletop skirmish games with a lot of different characters, steampunk, technology, ethereal magic, Cthulhu, and you can have underwater games of submarines, exploration, as well as playing on land, this is really the game for you. So Deep Wars or Shadowsea or combining them both together. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of different aspects that make it fast and easy to play. It's quick to learn. You have game cards that have all of your stats on them, so you don't need to have a lot of bookkeeping to keep track of things. You can mark your wounds on the cards. The stat descriptions, the special abilities are all on there. It doesn't take much time to learn to play, and the games themselves are very quick. And it only uses a few dice rolls, but you do have a lot of variety of things you can do. So instead of just killing each other, you can pick up treasure. You can explore, long-lost structures, break into sunken shipwrecks to steal things, activate ancient magic and ancient technological devices, use them in battle, ancient death rays that are on top of pyramids.
battle can be not with the dragon. Not with the dragon.
Yeah. And so there's a lot more to do than just, one-on-one beat them up. You can do that if you want to, but you can play the game a lot of different ways. And you can use a lot of your miniatures you have already, and you can create your own custom stats for them. So that is, there's a construction kit for making your own custom models that's in the book itself. So, you got some models lying around, you can stat them up and use them in the game. So cool. I think it's just very flexible, quick to play, and you can play it pretty much any way you want.
Yeah.
I think it's just a unique environment. It gives people something new to try.
Yeah, it sounds like an adventure on the table, basically.
Yeah, yes.
And I frequently stat up models because I may or may not have a few extra ones lying around that sort of fit the bill, maybe piles of them that probably even still need to be painted for it. So I've statted up a lot of guys because I was going to say, if you hadn't added that part, that was my addition to the elevator pitch for the game, is that that's great. It's almost like it's semi-miniature agnostic. You've got the models that are part of it, but you can build your own too and throw them on the table with the scaly horde if you have fish or whatever. And so that's a big selling point to me, is being able to bring my other models into the game so that they don't just sit on the shelf and collect dust.
Sure. Yeah. And what a lot of people like for Deep Wars is you can use aquarium scenery. And so that is some of the cheapest scenery that you could possibly find anywhere. Giant rocks and submarines and all kinds of plants and everything. That stuff is dirt cheap, and you just drop some down and put it onto you know, anything you want, and you're ready to go for a battle. And if you want to have wild creatures, if you don't want to, you know, get resin ones or metal ones, you can buy a tube. I forget what company makes it, but the tube.
Safari Limited.
Yes, Safari Limited tube.
Yep.
And get a whole bunch of sharks, put them on a base, you know, and you're ready to go.
Most definitely.
You've cleaned out some pet stores, haven't you, Mac?
No, I've cleaned out Michael's and Hobby Lobby of their tubes as well.
Yes. Yeah, one of the other things that that we've been trying to really get into now is the 3D printing aspect. And so a lot of the scenery, a lot of really detailed scenery, you can't really buy at a pet store. You can't get pyramids and you know, gigantic biosub racks, things like that. So we have made 3D models for these, so you can print out all kinds of different things. And we've really, you know, done a lot of that for wild creatures also, things that that are a little more difficult to find in a tube, different wild creatures. And so that's been something new that we've been doing in our last Kickstarters for the Uncharted Realms, is getting a lot of scenery, wild creatures, and some new characters and some new models for warbands. We're moving along with that as well.
Yep, that's been awesome.
All right, well, Eric, you said you didn't have a whole lot of time, but is there anything on your hobby desk, any paint projects, or you building any miniatures?
Yeah, so I painted two of the dinosaurs that were part of the Kickstarter a couple of months ago. So there's the Daggertooth King Lizard and the Finback Thunder Lizard. So those are the ones I just painted, took a lot of photos of those.
Cool.
They turned out great, but I've got the Forest Giant sitting there halfway done, and I have not been able to finish that one. So that is the next one that's on the board, is the Forest Giant. So he's got washes put down, and right now he's building up layers, and next step is some highlights and getting them finished. But that is the biggest one that's on there, and then there's a lot of other ones that that need to get painted. But I'm also looking at the Storm Dragon. That's another nice one, and guess just got to finish them.
I love that Forest Giant. That Forest Giant is awesome. It's awesome. So
it is awesome.
Go ahead.
No, that's one of my. That one had art made probably around 8 years ago when I got the original concept art, and it was just not. I could not find the time to get a miniature made for it, and it just became a lot simpler when 3D printing and 3D design took off the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And so it was a no-brainer just right now, just to get that one done. And there's a bunch of other ones that have artwork in the Deep Wars book and the Shadowsea book, which are on the docket to get made right now in 3D. And usually we make everything, once it's in 3D and made it into a 3D file, we make resin cast versions of them. But so we have physical and digital versions. The Forest Giant languished for many years. He really needed to get finished.
He's beautiful. So last question we have for you is, where can our listeners find stuff? Where can they find Deep Wars and Shadowsea so they can buy lots of stuff?
Well, our regular website is antimatter-games.com. And so everything we make is there on the online store. In Europe, a lot of our products are at Battlefield Berlin. That's one of our main European retailers. Figures for Sale, that's another one that's in the UK. That's an online reseller. And Noble Knight is one of the other big ones in the US that's a reseller.
Okay.
We're still working on getting in more stores all the time. So, that's part of the challenge of being a small game designer.
Sure. Well, we're doing our best to spread the word for you. I have been an advocate of the game for quite some time. It takes me a while, but I wear people down. Just look at this other guy I'm talking to with his books up in the corner there.
Yeah, my arm kind of hurts.
I often get blamed for sucking our crew into many, many different games. So, Eric, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. If there's anything we can ever do, if you're getting ready to launch a Kickstarter or getting ready to do something new, let us know. We'd love to have you back on and help you promote whatever that is in any way that we can. And for all of you guys out there listening, don't forget that you can go to the Coastal Con Facebook page. You can check out the Indie Invasion Facebook page as well. And we also have the Abyssal Realms Facebook group, which is Deep Wars and Antimatter or Deep Wars and Shadow Seas fan group. There's lots of cool stuff in there. Eric posts in there frequently. It's the kind of place where if you have a question in the middle of the game and he happens to be around, you'll get an answer that's going to be correct because it's going to be from him. And since he made the game, you can bet it's right, even if it's not what it says in the rule book, because it's his game and he can do that. But for the podcast itself, which this will be on YouTube and it'll be on our podcast channel on Podbean. But remember that we're available on Google Play, Spotify, iTunes, Pocket Cast, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Podbean, and TuneIn, all of those wonderful places where you can find it and listen. And yes, I will continue to say every single one of them every single time because I worked hard to get us into all of those places. So on that note, if the Erics would like to say goodbye. No? Which Eric is going first?
You're yes, the guest, Eric.
Yes, Eric, go first.
Okay, well, I thank you for having me on here. And hopefully you guys, we can chat again and discuss some other things, painting or general hobby if you want. And sure. Yeah, it'd be fun.
That'd be great. All right, Eric, do you want to take us out?
Yes, I will take us out. Thanks for watching, you guys. Make sure you check all those different links that Mac's going to put up in the end of the video and like and share and subscribe. And remember, when you're playing those games out there, prepare for the invasion.
All right.
Take it easy, guys.
Bye, guys.